What is going on, sports fans? Welcome to Season 7, Episode 4 of the Jack of All Trades Sports Podcast. We've got a lot to get to on this week's show. A five-pack of sports to talk about, starting with college basketball, coaching carousel craziness. We talk about kind of the new era of college basketball. A lot of coaches moving schools, including the big fish, John Calipari, moving from Kentucky to Arkansas. We talk about that, as well as the national championship game. UConn becomes the first school since Florida in 06 and 07 to repeat as the national champion. So we talk about that. We talk some women's college basketball as well, what Caitlin Clark has kind of done for women's basketball in general. Where does she rank among kind of people that have changed their sports and brought their sports into the limelight over the last 40 years? We talk about that a little bit. We talk some NBA, a regular season coming to an end, playoffs, scenarios, all that good stuff. Why I think the Cavs still are in trouble, but who I think the most ideal first-round matchup for the Cavs is as well. MLB, early season thoughts, NFL, mock draft season. We got a lot of sports to talk about. We're going to start with college basketball, though. And before we get into it, thanks to everyone for listening. How's it going? Jack Burney here with another award-winning episode. Your host with the most too sweet to be sour at the top of the hour. If you like the podcast, follow the podcast on Instagram at JoatSportsPod, at J-O-A-T SportsPod. You can also rate the podcast 5 stars, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. Want to go quick today, a little 30, 40-minute episode. Got a lot to do at work today with introductory coach press conference at Indiana State, and that's where we start our episode. So, college basketball. The big story is not the national championship, which UConn beat Purdue. We'll get to that in a minute. It is the coaching carousel. Late on Sunday night, John Calipari, Kentucky's men's basketball coach, who's been there for 15 seasons, won a national title, had tons of success, hasn't really had as much success in the last 5 or so years, haven't made a Sweet 16 since 2019. The rumors start floating in that John Calipari is going to leave the University of Kentucky to become the next head coach at Arkansas. And of course, the Arkansas vacancy was there because Eric Musselman, Arkansas's old coach, who had a lot of success with the Razorbacks over the last five years, went to USC. The USC opening is there because USC's coach went to SMU because SMU fired their coach after losing to Indiana State in the NIT. It's crazy how all these dominoes in the coaching carousel connect. But Calipari, one of the biggest names in college basketball, one of the biggest coaches in college basketball, leaves Kentucky to go to Arkansas. Arkansas is paying him a ton of money. And Arkansas is covering the whole buyout, so Kentucky owes him no money. So it was crazy seeing this news trickle in. Obviously, I think it's a good move for both sides. I'm a little bit more bullish on Kentucky's new hire. I'm going to get there in a minute. But Arkansas, I mean, it's a fresh start for John Calipari. He was at odds with the Kentucky AD. You could kind of tell that they didn't really like each other. They didn't really vibe. So now he gets a fresh start. He has more control on this Arkansas program than he would have had at Kentucky. And I think he's going to have Arkansas being competitive right away because he's such a good coach. Now, for Kentucky, it was crazy. I mean, they have some of the craziest fans, Big Blue Nation. They have some of the craziest fans in all of college basketball. Of course, Big Blue Nation was not thrilled with this move. They were not thrilled with Calipari at all. But then they started reaching for the stars about who they wanted their next head coach to be. They floated out Danny Hurley, who, of course, is the coach of the Connecticut Huskies, who just won back-to-back national titles. They were going to give Hurley a contract upwards, I think, to $11 or $12 million a year. They were going to make him the highest-paid coach in the history of Kentucky, I'm pretty sure. He said no. Then it was Scott Drew, the Baylor head coach, who, of course, won a national title a few years ago at Baylor. He said no, he'd rather go to Baylor. Then it was Nate Oates, the Alabama coach. Then it was Bruce Pearl, Billy Donovan, all these big names, all for it to end up with them hiring BYU's head coach, Mark Pope. Now, I got nothing against Mark Pope. He's a decent coach. Has he won an NCAA tournament game? No. But he's gotten BYU to national relevancy over the last couple of years. They were a 6 seed this year. They lost to 11 seed to Duquesne in the tournament, but they were a higher KenPom ranked team than Kentucky was this year. So Mark Pope does have success. He's built that BYU program into national relevancy, like I said, from relatively the ground up. Former Kentucky player. I wish him the best at Kentucky, and I truly think it's a win-win scenario. A lot of Kentucky fans are upset with the hire. Do I think they could have done better? Yes. Do I think I would rather have Coach Calipari coaching my team than Coach Mark Pope? Absolutely, I do. But I don't think it's a bad move because the Kentucky brand will always be bigger than John Calipari, and recruits will always want to play at Kentucky just because of the brand and the national power it is, the funding that the boosters give them, the NIL money, all that stuff. It's kind of becoming the name of the game in college sports. So although some people might be upset with the Mark Pope hire, I don't think it's that bit bad news for Kentucky. But my whole point is that this is just showing you kind of the era of college sports that we're in. John Calipari, who's been the face of Kentucky for the last 15 seasons, says, I think the grass is greener at a rival SEC school, Arkansas, because they're going to give me as much money as I want. They're going to give me as much NIL money as I want, and I'm going to get it the players I want. And NIL is becoming such a huge, huge part of college sports. I mean, coaches are going to need, especially at Big Ten schools, you know, SEC schools, you know, these big conference schools, they're going to need an NIL pool upwards of, what, 20 million, 10 million to field the roster in the highly competitive sports of football and basketball. And so since Kentucky, he was already at odds with the administration, he wanted a new opportunity at Arkansas where they were going to give him whatever he wanted and give him full, complete control of the program. And the NIL money is so crucial because you're going to have to rebuild your roster year in and year out, not just at the big schools, but obviously at the little schools as well. And that's a perfect transition because I did want to talk about just the state of college sports and the coaching carousel because I do work in Terre Haute, Indiana for Channel 2, WTWO. If you're interested in my reporting, you can follow me on Twitter at JackBurneyTV. But they got hit big time with the coaching carousel. So Indiana State, they won the Missouri Valley Conference regular season title for the first time since 2000 this season. They go to the NIT championship. They lose to Seton Hall, 32-7 record. Their whole starting five is represented on the All Missouri Valley Conference teams. And then there obviously, as it happens a lot in college sports, a head coach at the mid-major level has success. Josh Schertz had a lot of success for Indiana State. He takes the job at St. Louis because they're paying him a lot more money. And they have a lot more NIL money than Indiana State. It's like a $1 to $2 million difference in NIL pool money at St. Louis than Indiana State. And I wish Coach Schertz nothing but the best. I don't blame him at all for making the move. He did what's best for him. He did what's best for his family. I'm excited to see what he does at St. Louis. But it just speaks to the ever-changing landscape of college sports because after he announced the move to St. Louis and was introduced at St. Louis, I think it's 11 or 12 out of 15 players on Indiana State basketball's roster entered the transfer portal. And it is just so – it's becoming so much like professional sports. The transfer portal is like free agency, and the NIL money is kind of what's the name of the game because Indiana State, they have a ton of good players. Robbie Avila, Ryan Conwell. Those are – you know, Robbie Avila. Everyone knows Robbie Avila. You know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Milk Chamberlain, Larry Blurred, all the nicknames on social media. He was on the Pat McAfee show. That dude's going to get a bag in NIL money. He's going to get upwards of $250,000, $300,000 in NIL money. So is Ryan Conwell, who's an outstanding shooting guard who I think has NBA potential. And all the ISU players in the starting five said, you know, Schertz recruited us. We're gonna go in the transfer portal. Do I expect some of them to follow him to St. Louis? Yes. But I think it just speaks to the bigger issue in college sports is that even if Schertz would have stayed at Indiana State, I believe that the majority, if not all five of the starting five at Indiana State would have entered the transfer portal because of how much money they can get on the open market. So what I'm saying is mid-majors are dying. Is that a little dramatic? Maybe. But a really, really great mid-major, like Gonzaga is the outlier. There's never going – you can hear all these coaches like Dusty May, who's now at Michigan, or any of these other coaches. He said he wanted FAU to be the Gonzaga of the Southeast or something like that, or the Gonzaga of the South. But there's never going to be another Gonzaga because Gonzaga is not a mid-major anymore. But like teams like Indiana State, teams like, you know, College of Charleston, teams like, I don't know, name one, Oral Roberts with Max Abesmith, who went to Texas. They're never going to be able to have sustained success as a mid-major. The most amount of good years they're going to get is 1 to 2 with their current players because after 1 to 2 years, the NIL money is going to improve at the Power 5 schools, at the Power 6 schools, even bigger, you know, mid-major schools, A-10 schools like Dayton and St. Louis, like where Josh Schertz is. Mid-majors are not going to be able to compete because they don't have the funds, they don't have the resources necessary to compete with the bigger schools, and that is kind of a sad thing in college basketball, especially not as much in college football, but in college basketball especially, because the thing that makes March Madness so great, and I know I'm going on a little bit of a soapbox here, the thing that makes March Madness so great is the teams like a VCU that makes the Final Four, like George Mason when they made the Final Four, like St. Peter's when they made the Elite Eight, like these underdog mid-major schools making runs and then having some of the same teams back next year. It's not going to happen like that because of NIL, because of the transfer portal, because of how the landscape of college athletics is changing. So I just wanted to touch on that a little bit. I find it pretty interesting following all this stuff with college athletics. It's becoming a lot more like pro sports, and I think college athletes should be able to make money off their name, image, and likeness? Absolutely, I do, because the amount of money they make for their universities, the amount of time and talent and effort it is required to be a Division I college athlete. But I think there needs to be some sort of control on it just to make it more of a level playing field for all the conferences and all the schools. That's my opinion on it. All right, UConn dominates Purdue. UConn wins. I think it was 68-50 was the final score, something like that. They win their second straight national title. What a dominant performance. What a job by Danny Hurley. These UConn Huskies, back-to-back national champions. Donovan Clingan, Tristan Newton, obviously all the guys, they did an outstanding job. Their closest game in this tournament, I believe, was 14 points. In the last two tournaments, it's the same thing. They've covered the spread in every tournament game. They're 12-0, obviously, in the last two tournaments. 12-0 against the spread as well. Absolutely insane run of domination by UConn, who I think this two-year stretch for UConn is up there with the best two-year stretch in college basketball history. They've been outstanding. I mean, they were my pick to win it all. Not on this podcast. I had Purdue winning it all on this podcast, but in a lot of other brackets I did, I picked UConn because they were the clear best team, and I didn't see anybody beating them. And I really liked their strategy against Zach Edey and Purdue. Zach Edey wrapped up an incredible, incredible Purdue career on Monday night. But their strategy was, we're going to let Edey do what he can. He's a great player. We're not going to stop him. And they didn't stop him. Edey had 37 points and 10 rebounds. But Danny Hurley said, look, if we can hold the rest of their team to under 25 points combined, we're going to win the game. That's exactly what they did. They held the rest of the team to 23 points. Edey scored 37 to Purdue 60, but they lost by 18 because that was UConn's strategy. So UConn gets it done. 14 million people watched the men's game, men's national title game. It was on TBS. A little bit of an interesting decision there. That's a perfect segue into topic number two of our five pack, which is women's college hoops and Caitlin Clark. So let's transition to women's college hoops and Caitlin Clark more specifically. So the women's national title game on Sunday between Iowa and South Carolina got 18.7 million viewers. Not only was it the highest watched basketball game this year, it's the highest watched basketball game in the last 5 years since 2019, dating back to that 2019 NBA Finals between the Raptors and the Warriors. So that's the Caitlin Clark effect. And I mean, kudos to South Carolina. They win the national title, finish off an incredible 38-0 season. Coach Dawn Staley wins her third national title with the Gamecocks. They are a dominant force as well, much like UConn was on the men's side. 38-0 is incredible, and she's an incredible coach. But Caitlin Clark, and Dawn Staley said it herself after the game, she gave the flowers to Caitlin Clark and said, thank you for elevating our sport. You are one of the greatest of all time. And I do want to talk about Caitlin Clark's ability. I mean, 18.7 million viewers in the women's game is incredible. I've tried to tune into the women's tournament, you know, most years, but I'll admit the last couple of years, because of what Caitlin Clark has done at Iowa, it's become must-see TV. That, like, Sunday, I sat down on the TV in the newsroom, watched that whole game, because I was excited to see what Caitlin Clark was going to do against such a great team in South Carolina. And really, women's college basketball is kind of having a moment. Not to sound like Bill Simmons, but I think they're, among general basketball fans, among general sports fans, among casual sports fans, I feel like a lot more people cared about the women's tournament than the men's tournament. And a big reason why is because of Caitlin Clark. And I heard about this topic. I'm going to kind of touch on Bill Simmons. I talked about it with my good friend and friend of the program, Chauncey Seeger, who's been on the show. He's going to be on the show in a couple weeks for an NBA playoff preview pod, fun fact. But we were talking about game changers in their sports. And what I mean by game changer is someone who elevates their sport into a national spotlight. So think of Muhammad Ali in boxing. Think of Tiger Woods in golf. Think of Wayne Gretzky in hockey. Think of Serena Williams in women's tennis. Caitlin Clark, I think, is a top five person of that caliber in the last 40 years. Like, I still think Tiger Woods is number one, what he did for golf. Everyone tuned in on Sundays to watch Tiger Woods when he was at the peak of his powers. He's rocking the red Nike golf shirt on the Sundays. I mean, Tiger still draws a crowd, but when Tiger was in his peak, he was must-see television, and he really made golf popular and mainstream in the United States, and that sport would not be where it is today without him. I think Michael Jordan, I would still take number two in the NBA because of what he did, not just for the game. He kind of saved the NBA in a way. I mean, really, because the NBA was kind of a dying product, and I think Magic and Bird did it first. You know, they obviously did a lot for saving college basketball in that 79 title game, but they really made that interest in the NBA in the 80s kind of ramp up. And then when Jordan comes in, elevates it in the 80s and the 90s, the NBA not only became one of the most popular sports in America, it became a global sport and a global sensation, especially with the Dream Team and kind of what they did. So I would have Michael Jordan number two. Is it crazy to put Caitlin Clark number three? Like, I mean, she has done so much for the popularity of women's basketball. And, like, I think she's going to take that popularity. And the reason I say women's basketball is because I think she's going to take some of that popularity to the next level in the WNBA. I mean, look at the Indiana Fever. I mean, they have the number one pick in this upcoming WNBA draft. They're going to take Caitlin Clark. 36 out of their 40 games this next WNBA season are going to be on national television. If that doesn't speak to what Caitlin Clark is doing for women's basketball, I don't know what does. I mean, she's an icon, she's a generational talent, and she's really a game changer for her sport and bringing women's basketball into the limelight. And I've always had a soft spot for women's basketball because I, you know, my sisters played. I, you know, announced for women's basketball in college. It's a great product. I mean, basketball is a beautiful game, whether it's played by men or women. And I just appreciate greatness, and seeing her is greatness. And I'm glad that a lot of people around the country are kind of watching more women's basketball as a result, because they work just as hard as the men do and get, you know, not as much recognition. So I just wanted to touch on that a little bit. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, so that's two out of our five pack of topics, or what was I going to call it? Not a five pack, a take five. Jack of all trades, take five is this episode. We're taking five leagues around sports and talking about them. So we already talked about men's and women's college basketball. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, NBA, we get ready for the playoffs, NFL, mock draft season, Nick Chubb back with the Browns, and MLB, Shane Bieber out for the season, what it means for the Guardians, and other early season takeaways. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this.
This is wrestling legend John Cena, and you can't see me, but you're listening to this week's episode, Jack of All Trades. Here's part two.
Welcome back to Season 7, Episode 4 of Jack of All Trades. All right, we're going to talk some NBA right now. I'm going to rank my top 8 NBA title contenders. I think there are only 8 teams this season that could win the NBA championship, and if I get it wrong, you can old takes expose me, whatever. But I'm going to rank those in a minute. I want to talk some Cleveland Cavaliers first. So the Cavaliers right now, as it stands, are the 4 seed in the Eastern Conference. I believe they are 47-33. They're 47-33. They have, I believe, 2 or 3 games left. They play the Pacers tonight in an absolutely monster game in terms of playoff positioning. So they play the Pacers tonight. I'm going to read you the NBA standings right now that talk about the ideal first-round matchup for the Cavs. But the caveat is I'm not confident in any of these first-round matchups. So let's give you the Eastern Conference standings first. So in the East, the Celtics have clinched the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. They are 62-18, best record in the league. The only other two teams that have clinched an actual playoff spot in the top six are the Bucks and the Knicks. And right now, the Bucks lead the Knicks by a game for that 2 seed in the East. So the Bucks are the 2 seed. The Knicks are the 3 seed. The Cavs are the 4 seed. They're tied, I think. No, they're a game ahead of the Magic and the Pacers, who are the 5 and 6. They're 2 games ahead of the 76ers, and they're 3 games ahead of Miami. So I think the worst the Cavs could be is the 7. I don't think that's going to happen. But looking at the Eastern Conference standings, the 1 seed is Boston, the 2 seed is Milwaukee, the 3-6 matchup is the Knicks and the Pacers, and the 4-5 matchup is the Cavs and the Magic. I think that's exactly the first-round matchup the Cavs would want out of any of these teams. no offense to Orlando. I mean, I've been really impressed with Orlando's turnaround and what they've done this season. Paolo Banchero has an argument to be an All-NBA guy this year. I think it's a little premature, but he's been outstanding in his second season out of Duke. And the Magic are really ahead of schedule. And they could be a top four seed in the East. I don't think anybody predicted that in the preseason. But with the Cavs in their current state, the big problem is that, Darius Garland, I don't know what happened to Darius Garland. We kind of touched on it the last couple of weeks. He's not confident. He's not the same player he was in 2022. He is not ready to be that second fiddle to Donovan Mitchell. And then Donovan Mitchell is hurt, and he's not close to 100%. And you can really tell in the way the Cavs offense operates. So I don't see them making a deep run. But I want to ask the question. This season for the Cavs, what was it about? Was it getting to the Eastern Conference Finals? Was it winning a playoff series? Was it improving upon last season? Or, in my opinion, this whole season has kind of been leading up to this summer. And what I mean by that is, I think the goal of this season for Dan Gilbert, for Kobe Altman, for JB Bickerstaff, for the whole organization was to re-sign Donovan Mitchell. And I think if Donovan Mitchell doesn't re-sign this offseason, sign an extension, that it's going to be considered a failure of a season. So then I'm asking myself the question, okay, what do the Cavs need to do in these playoffs to be able to firmly 100% be able to bring back Mitchell, in my opinion? And I think they need to make the conference finals. And I think there is no chance that happens because Mitchell's not 100%, because Garland's tentative, and I just don't know how effective Jared Allen and Evan Mobley can be in multiple playoff rounds. Do I think the Cavs can win their first playoff series against the Magic? Yeah. But the Cavs really have a decision to make moving forward. And a lot of, you know, the talk this offseason was, could the core four of the Cavs play together? Could Mobley and Allen coexist? But I think the question that we weren't asking, that we need to be asking ourselves for the future of this Cleveland Cavaliers organization, is, can Garland and Mitchell coexist? And do you need to choose between the two of them? Because Darius Garland, I mean, he's struggled this year, but there are teams that would move heaven and earth to have Darius Garland. Could you imagine what San Antonio and the Spurs would do to have a Darius Garland on their team? They don't have a point guard. Imagine pairing Darius Garland up with Victor Wembanyama. You could probably get anybody on San Antonio besides Wembanyama and Devin Vassell. You could get anybody plus picks from San Antonio for Darius Garland. They're desperate for Darius Garland. And obviously, this is if Mitchell re-signs. It signs an extension. What I'm saying is, I don't see a long-term future where the Cavs keep both of these guys. They need to make their decision, and I personally would rather have Donovan Mitchell than Darius Garland, just because I know what Donovan Mitchell is, and I don't know if Darius Garland is ever going to get back to what I thought he could be, if that makes sense. So I think it's always been about extending Mitchell or bust, and I think that's what has been the primary goal of this season for the Cavs, and I think they need to make a deep run. What side of the bracket would I rather be on? I'd rather be on the side of the bracket with Milwaukee. So if the Cavs could get Milwaukee, if the Cavs could somehow get the 3 seed and be face Milwaukee in the second round, that'd be awesome. But I think the highest seed the Cavs could get is the 4 seed. I just don't see the Cavs beating Boston. But in terms of first round matchups, if you can't play Milwaukee, who might be without Giannis, I would probably take the Magic. So I guess that gives the Cavs the best chance to advance, if the standings stay like they do right now. But they have a huge game tonight against the 6-seeded Indiana Pacers, like I said. But I would rather face Orlando out of any of the other teams. All right, let's get to my 8 teams in the NBA that I think can win the NBA title. We're going to rank them power ranking style, starting with the number one team I think could win the NBA title, and that is last year's NBA champion, the defending NBA champion, Denver Nuggets. They have the best player in the world in Nikola Jokic, the most manipulative, and what I mean manipulative, I mean he's the most control over the game that I've seen of any player in the world. He puts every defense he faces in an impossible position. Single cover him, he's going to kill you as a scorer. Double team him, he's going to kill you as a passer. I mean, he is so good at everything. They're the championship favorite because his style of play works against any defense. No matter how tight a possession becomes, they're going to give the ball to Jokic and it's going to be okay. They obviously won the title last year. The two-man game with Jamal Murray is unguardable. He has a great connection with Aaron Gordon as well. Michael Porter Jr. and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope shoot the ball well from three. This Nuggets team is built to win another title. So I would have Denver number one. Their defense is a little bit worrisome, but I still think Denver is my number one absolute favorite team that I think will could win the NBA title. Two, I'm going to go with my favorites in the East, the Boston Celtics. I would argue that Boston is the most talented team in the league. I think they have the most talent top to bottom in the league. I think Jaylen Brown is this is going to sound like a crazy take by me, but looking at their starting five, I think Jaylen Brown might be their least important starter, but he's going to be an all-NBA guy. Like, Kristaps Porzingis is so good. I mean, his his ability to stretch the floor is something the Celtics team was missing last season. Big reason why they won 62 games, obviously. And he stayed relatively healthy for the whole year, knock on wood. That was my big concern when they brought in Porzingis. But so far, it's been a smashing success, that trade. Jrue Holiday falls into their lap in the Damian Lillard trade. That not only sent Boston to another level, but it brought down Milwaukee a little bit. They just extended Holiday as well on a deep contract. Boston kind of lives and dies by the three, but they don't die very often. They have so many good, they have so much shooting, so much size, versatility. Everyone can pass. Everyone can put the ball on the floor. They don't have a lot of weaknesses. Their only thing that concerns me is their late game efficiency and late game offense. Who's going to take the last shot, you know? So that's going to hurt them in later rounds, but I just don't see this Celtics team not making at least the Eastern Conference Finals. So I got them at number two. Number three is going to surprise some people. I really like the Oklahoma City Thunder. I really, really like them. They're giving me a little bit, and I know Bill Simmons, I think, has talked about this. Some other NBA people have probably talked about this too. The Oklahoma City Thunder kind of give me early 2010s Warriors vibes, like the 2012, 2013, 2014 Warriors, before the Warriors became the Warriors and won that first title. They were kind of, you know, competing in playoff series. They lost in 7-1 year to the Clippers, I'm pretty sure. And then all of a sudden, oh yeah, they won three titles in the last 4 years. I think the Thunder could be on a similar trajectory. They have all the makings of a championship team. They have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's an MVP-level player. I think a top six, top seven player in the league. He can create his own shot. He's such a clutch player. He always guarantees a high-quality shot when he's on the floor. They're dependable. Obviously, they have Jalen Williams. He is great with the pull-up jumper. Chet Holmgren's been outstanding in his first full season. Lou Dort's a good defender. I think they're only one of two teams besides Boston in the top five in both offensive and defensive efficiency. The only thing that scares me, like I said, is the inexperience and the rebounding a little bit. But I think this team is a threat, and I think they could win any series they find themselves in just because of how good SGA is, how versatile they are on both offense and defense. So I got them at number three. Number four, I got the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't know why I have Milwaukee at four. I wanted to put Minnesota or the Clippers even above them, or the Mavericks even with Luka and Kyrie, but I got to stick with Milwaukee because I think they're the second-best team in the East. They're just 500 under new head coach Doc Rivers. Damian Lillard hasn't had a good shooting season by his standards, but still, I have to call them a contender and my fourth most likely team to win the title because they're in the East, which is outside of Boston wide open. I would say that there's an argument for a lot of teams in the West that are better than Milwaukee, but they're in the West, and they're going to end up, you know, kind of beating up on each other. The East is softer. Julius Randle is out for the Knicks. Joel Embiid is just getting back for the Sixers. The Cavs aren't going anywhere. The Magic can't score. Indiana can't defend. Miami is not the same Miami that we've grown accustomed to. Milwaukee would be favored in every series against anyone in the East except the Celtics. I just think they're going to flip a switch. Giannis, Lillard, Middleton trio has been a wrecking ball. They have the best offensive rating in the league and second best overall net rating, those three out of three man rotations in basketball, the Giannis, Lillard, Middleton trio. If everything can come together, and that's a huge, huge if, they have the goods to compete with Boston for a trip to the NBA Finals. They're my fourth seed. Then my fifth seed, my fifth team that I think is most likely is the Minnesota Timberwolves. They need Cat back. If they can get Karl Anthony Towns, they're like up there with OKC, I would say, but I just don't think they have enough without him. If they get Towns back, I think you can make the case that they match up better with Denver than anybody in the West because of Karl Anthony Towns' ability to defend Nikola Jokic. But I think I would favor Minnesota in a lot of matchups in the West. I think they're being slept on. Anthony Edwards, superstar, built for the postseason stage. Naz Reid is really, really good as well. They have a lot of size as well. You know, Naz Reid makes double big lineups a 48-minute option. I'm a little more bullish on them than some others, but it wouldn't surprise me to see Minnesota kind of make a run, you know, if they get Karl Anthony Towns back. So those are my top five. We got the Nuggets, the Celtics, the Thunder, the Bucks, and the Timberwolves. And the other three teams I think can win the finals this year are the Clippers, the Lakers, and the Dallas Mavericks. So let's start with the Clippers. They're probably going to be the four seed in the West. But if they're fully healthy, they're, you know, with stars like James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, and Paul George, they can make the Clippers a strong playoff push. The experience those three players can have. And when they were humming, we thought the Clippers had finals potential earlier this season. So I think the Clippers definitely have a chance. The Lakers, the regular season hasn't been pretty for them, but if, depending on matchup, I think they could make a run in the playoffs. You know, the regular season wasn't pretty for the Lakers last season. They make the play-in tournament, they get out of the play-in, and they make the conference finals. Could I see that happening again? Yeah. Obviously, LeBron and AD they got, but D'Angelo Russell has been outstanding this season. Austin Reeves is going to provide that scoring. So I think the Lakers have an outside chance. And then I think the Mavericks were my last team just because of the Luka-Kyrie factor. In my opinion, outside of the Denver series in the West, the Mavericks are going to have the best player on the floor in every series in Luka Doncic. And when you have the best player on the floor in a series, you can win that series. So that's why I'd have the Mavericks as eight. So that's going to do it for the NBA talk. Let's talk some MLB and NFL before we go on our way. Let's go MLB. So Shane Bieber out for the season. It was a gut punch for the Guardians. Gut punch happened Saturday of last week. But the Guardians have continued responding earlier this season. They're 9-3. They are second in the league in run differential, just like we all saw, just like we all thought. Stephen Kwan's leading the league in batting average. They're getting great offensive contributions across the board. Now the pitching is a problem. Shane Bieber out for the season. I said last week's show that if the Guardians could stay healthy pitching wise with Tristan McKenzie, with Shane Bieber, with all those guys, get Gavin Williams back, that I would pick them to win the AL Central. I still think they could win the AL Central, but Bieber being out is a gut punch, and it sucks because Bieber was finally getting to the level that we grew accustomed to seeing him, you know, being a perennial all-star, being a perennial Cy Young candidate. He was 2-0. He hadn't given up a run yet. He'd struck out 20 across two games. He was outstanding. And then the Tommy John surgery news comes out of nowhere. But it's all up to see how this Guardians team responds. You know, they still have Tristan McKenzie. They still have the young guys, Logan Allen, Tanner Bibee, and Gavin Williams when they get him back eventually. They're going to have to figure out that fifth starter, whether it's Carlos Carrasco, whether it's Xavier Curry, whether it's somebody else. But the good news for the Guardians is the bullpen has been great outside of a late-inning collapse by Scott Barlow a couple weeks ago. Emmanuel Clase has been outstanding. They've gotten great contributions across the bullpen as well. So they can keep the bullpen and the offense going, and the rest of the starting rotation can stay relatively healthy, I can see the Guardians making some noise. But I've been really impressed with the job Stephen Vogt has done early in the season. I believe this is the best start to a Guardian season since 2011. They're 9-3. I mean, they've been outstanding offensively, which has always been the concern with this Guardians team. But they have the second or third best record in the league behind just the Yankees and the Dodgers, 750 winning percentage. I mean, they've been great. They've scored 69 runs. Their plus 35 run differential is second in the league behind the Kansas City Royals. So I've been really, really impressed with the Guardians early in the season. Do I still think they can make a run? I absolutely do. But it's going to be a lot harder now, obviously, without the services of Shane Bieber, who's having another outstanding season. But they got to rely on that starting pitching. The young guys have to step up and be able to pitch a full season this season without inning limits, without pitch count limits. They got to be able to be fully there. The bullpen's got to buy in, and the offensive's got to keep contributing. You know you're going to get great offense out of Jose Ramirez and Josh Naylor. They need Stephen Kwan to keep contributing. They need Andrés Giménez, and they need the bottom of the order to contribute as well. And if they can do that, I think the Guardians will have a good chance to make some noise this season. So Another one of my early season surprise, how about the Kansas City Royals? 9-4 these Royals are. No one saw that coming, not even fans of the Royals. I mean, they've been outstanding. I mean, Bobby Witt obviously is someone that a lot of people liked, considered to be a dark horse, you know, MVP guy. So far this season, he's looked the part, hitting .358, four homers, eight runs batted in. He had two home runs yesterday in their win over, I believe it was the Houston Astros. They're 9-4. They've won seven in a row. So this Royals team is maybe ahead of schedule a little bit. The Yankees obviously 10-3. The Orioles are 8-4. No surprises there in the American League East. The American League West, everyone's kind of floating around .500. The Astros are 4-10. They've kind of been struggling out the gates. And then in the National League, the Pittsburgh Pirates are 9-4 as well. They've been a little bit of a surprise, but elsewhere in the MLB, you know, the same olds, the Braves and the Dodgers leading their respective divisions. But so far, been a good start to the MLB season for sure. So I wanted to touch on the MLB. Then the NFL, our last of the Take 5 episode of Jack of All Trades is the NFL. Let's start with our top 10 mock draft. All right, so we're going pretty fast in this week's episode, but wanted to get it in. Didn't want to take too much time out of this week to do this episode because I've been busy with work and everything. And I know you guys don't want to sit here listening to me for hours and hours when the Masters is on and all that stuff when it's nice weather outside. So let's start with our top 10 NFL mock draft. Number one pick for the Chicago Bears, Caleb Williams. If Caleb Williams is not the number one pick, I will never do a podcast again. He's going to be the number one pick to the Bears. In just a few weeks, he'll join the Bears as the number one pick. Then you got the number two and three picks between the Commanders and the Patriots. It's going to be Jaden Daniels or Drake May in both of these spots. Right now, what I'm hearing is that the Commanders like Jaden Daniels better. They're meeting with Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, and Drake May all this coming week. But I think they're going to go with Jaden Daniels, the Heisman Trophy winner. So I'm going to take Jaden Daniels at two, which means the Patriots are going to wind up with Drake May. They could trade down from this spot, but by far their biggest need is a new franchise quarterback. And I think they're going to draft Drake May, believing he can be that guy. So we're going to go three quarterbacks off the board right off the rip. Caleb Williams to Chicago, Jaden Daniels to Washington, Drake May to New England. The fourth pick, a lot of people think maybe it's going to be a receiver here. Maybe Malik Nabers from LSU, maybe Roma Dunze from Washington. I'm going to still go with the guy I think is the best receiver in the draft. That's Marvin Harrison Jr. out of Ohio State. If the Cardinals move down, they're going to miss out on him. But I think they're going to opt to stay in and take one of the best wide receiver prospects in recent memory. I think they're going to go with Marvin Harrison at four. The fifth pick belongs to the Chargers, but all the reports are that the Chargers are going to trade out of this pick because it seems like a lot of GMs and a lot of teams are falling in love and tripping over themselves about J.J. McCarthy. I've been on record saying I don't think J.J. McCarthy is that good of an NFL quarterback, but hey, I'm not a lot of people. A lot of people who know football better than me seem to like J.J. McCarthy, so a lot of people think someone's going to trade up to five to take him, and I'm doing my mock draft with that in mind, and I think the team that's going to trade up to take him is the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings GM Kwezi Adofo-Mensah said this week, there are multiple quarterbacks that we're in love with just on an outright basis. I think J.J. McCarthy is one of those guys, and I can see the Vikings trying to trade up and get their franchise quarterback and take J.J. McCarthy at five. The Giants are at six. I'd be shocked if the Giants didn't go receiver. I personally like Roma Dunze better than Malik Nabers, so I'm going to go with Roma Dunze. He's a clear number one receiver, and I think the Giants are going to give Daniel Jones a bona fide number one for the first time in his career, assuming they run it back with him at quarterback. The Titans have the seventh pick. They've had their pick penciled in since they got the seventh pick. They're going to take Joe Alt, the offensive tackle out of Notre Dame. That's their biggest need is offensive line help to protect Will Levis. Joe Alt's the best lineman. Match made in heaven. Eight is the Atlanta Falcons. I think this is our first defensive player off the board. I think they're going to take Dallas Turner, the edge from Alabama. Obviously, their new head coach, Raheem Morris, is a defensive guy. I think they're going to go edge rusher, and I think he's going to be probably the best edge rusher off the board. Nine, I think the Bears stay at nine, don't trade down. I think they go receiver. I think they're going to take Malik Nabers, who's going to be a number one receiver, which would set up Caleb Williams and Malik Nabers being that quarterback receiver duo, obviously with DJ Moore. I would love if the Bears could get a quarterback and receiver in the first round. And then to close out the top 10, the New York Jets, they could take Brock Bowers, tight end out of Georgia. I think they're going to go offensive line. I think they're going to take Talese Fuega out of Oregon State, especially obviously what happened with Aaron Rodgers last season. He gets hurt on the fourth play. They need to put their best five players in the line out there to protect their Hall of Fame quarterback. So I think they're going to go with Talese Fuega out of Oregon State. That's going to round out our top 10 mock draft. Before we go, I wanted to touch on Nick Chubb. The Browns restructure Nick Chubb's deal. They restructure Nick Chubb's deal, a one-year deal. I want to get the exact number for you. Nick Chubb and the Browns rework their contract to keep Chubb in Cleveland, thankfully. So Chubb agreed to take a reworked deal to lower his base salary to $11.75 million, with the chance to earn back a lot of that based off performance-based incentives. Obviously, Chubb suffered the gruesome, horrible, you know, long-term injury against the Steelers in week two. It put his NFL future into doubt, but the city of Cleveland loves him. The organization loves him. He's been an outstanding player, racked up 6,500 yards, 48 rushing touchdowns over six seasons. He's going to be back at some point this year, and I think he's going to complete an excellent comeback story if he returns to form in 2022. And I think the Browns at least wanted to give him the option to do it in a Cleveland uniform. Andrew Berry said after the injury, they didn't want the last memory of Nick Chubb, who's been such a great representation of the franchise, the city of Cleveland. They didn't want the last memory of him in a Browns uniform to be that injury against Pittsburgh. So I'm really glad they reworked a deal for him to stay in Cleveland for this season. And I'm rooting for the guy. He's been one of my favorite Browns players of all time. And it's just great to see him get a chance to kind of prove, hey, I'm still playing football. I still got a lot of football left in me. And I want to do it here. And I think it's going to be great to see that. So just wanted to touch on that real quick. And with that, we're going to say so long for this week's episode. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at Joat Sports Pod. That's at J-O-A-T Sports Pod. Give me a follow on Twitter at Jack Burney TV or at The Real J Burns. That's at The Real J B-E-R-N-Z. Be a friend. Tell a friend. Share the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next week with another award-winning episode. Until then, I've been Jack Burney saying so long. Have a good week, everybody.